It's Thursday, November 12th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. First things first, it's Normal's 39th birthday. That's right, on November 12, 1970, Keith Strop got the official certification of the nonprofit organization as Normal. So let's all join together and sing happy birthday to Normal. Happy... What's that? I'm sorry, our legal department is telling us that happy birthday to you is not pod safe. Been all day at the Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. They held it at the Albuquerque Convention Center, and boy, I'm telling you, Stashers, this was huge. For the plenary session, there had to be at least 1,000, maybe 1,500 people in attendance, and the conference center was taking many, many rooms. One thing that's very interesting about the Drug Policy Alliance is since they concentrate on all drug policy, not just marijuana, they have many different breakout sessions that are focused on a specific area of drug law reform. So I spent most of my day, naturally, in the room that was featuring all the marijuana discussions, but of course there were also other rooms around featuring discussions on ibogaine and methadone maintenance and cocaine and all sorts of different areas, needle exchange that you would find in harm reduction. So very interesting, and I wish I could be at all those places all at once to listen to everyone. But as your humble reporter, I've got to be where the marijuana action is happening. Met a whole... a whole bunch of people that I've found at all the other events. Tanya Davis from Miami Valley Normal, she was there. I was so glad to see her. And Lauren Vasquez from Santa Barbara or Santa Cruz. I always forget which one. They're all the same to me. Matt Abel from Michigan. Osh was there from Wisconsin. But the most interesting encounter that I think I had all day was running into Dana Beal. That's right. Dana Beal, the activist who was at my panel at the Normal Conference in San Francisco, and then, of course, later was busted in Nebraska in a van with two other fellas with 150 pounds of marijuana. And he was not happy with me. He, of course, had gotten wind of my reporting on the issue and some of my my tone on the reporting. And the first thing he had said to me is that I need to do my research first. Specifically said, you need to do more research. And we had quite a discussion that I can't really go into here on the stash. And of course, Dana wasn't able to talk about his case because of the pending legal issues. But I did mention to him that 150 pounds of weed in Nebraska is a kind of a tough story to defend in the media. His response to me was that there are 7,000 medical marijuana patients in Michigan, and if you look at 150 pounds of marijuana and divide that by 7,000, the problem is we didn't have enough marijuana. So we'll keep an eye on what happens there in the Dana Beal case. Very interesting running into him. Plenty of reformers from all around. I ran into Desra Noel from New Mexico normal, and ran into Allison Holcomb from Washington. ACLU was there. One very heartwarming meeting was running into Maxwell. Maxwell approached me, a young kid, maybe in his 20s. I keep saying kid. I should say young adult, but a college student. And he told me that he's been listening to the Daily Audio Stash, both myself and when Chris Goldstein was doing the podcast prior. He said he'd been listening since he was a sophomore in high school. And I wasn't exactly sure how to feel about that. On the one hand, I was very flattered that I have such a long-term listener. On the other hand, I was like thinking a high school sophomore listening to our podcast, but I imagine it's not such a bad thing. I mean, we are just telling the truth. But, you know, they executed Socrates for telling the truth to the young people, so it always makes me wonder. So coming up on your Daily Audio Stash today, we're going to kind of do things a little bit different. I want to give you a lot of live audio from the DPA Reform Conference. So we'll get to our calendar so we can get you caught up on the events happening in other places in the country and some shout outs. But instead of hemp headlines, I want to bring you Ethan Nadelman's remarks at the opening plenary session of the Drug Policy Conference. Very entertaining speaker. And following that, I went to the breakout session on marijuana legislation. And this was had Mason Tvert, who we all know from SAFER, Lorenzo Jones from A Better Way Foundation, Allison Holcomb from the Washington State ACLU, and Whitney Taylor, the woman behind Question 2 Decriminalization in Massachusetts. I have a couple of sound clips. Aaron Houston from MPP was the moderator. Got a great clip from Aaron. Some audio from Lorenzo Jones. But most specifically, I want to play for you my interview after the session with Whitney Taylor. I asked her direct questions regarding the aftermath of Question 2, and we've reported that on the Stash as well, and I think you'll be interested in her responses. Following that, we will then go to a session later in the day on medical marijuana. I specifically wanted to be at this session to ask the question I always want to ask about medical marijuana, and that is, if it's becoming so much more accepted and so much more successful, why are the bills becoming so much more restrictive? I got to ask that of Karen O'Keefe, who's the Director of State Relations for the Marijuana Policy Project. And as a surprise, I also got an answer from the Arizona campaign manager, who happened to be in the audience. So lots of great audio addressing some controversies in the marijuana movement. This is your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Roll me something fat and long. Pack me a bowl or fill me a bong. It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
It's time for your cannabis community calendar, available online at normal.org/calendar. To get your events added to the calendar, send me an email with the subject calendar request to stash@normal.org. Friday, November 13th marks the grand opening of Oregon Normal's Cannabis Cafe at 700 Northeast Deakin Street in Portland, Oregon. It's a cafe for medical marijuana patients only who are members of Oregon Normal, where they'll be allowed to smoke and vaporize while socializing with others. For more details, check out ornorml.org. Speaking of Oregon Normal, they'll be holding their monthly cardholders meeting at the same location, 700 Northeast Deakin. You must be a medical marijuana patient and member of Oregon Normal to attend. Following the cardholders meeting will be a general public meeting, which will be just down the street at the Good Neighbor Pizzeria, open to all members of the public for planning and strategizing for the upcoming spring season. Also on Saturday, Normal of Waco, Inc. will be having its monthly members meeting at Smoke and Rays on Highway 77. And Normal Show Live goes on the air Saturday night, live from Oregon Normal's Cannabis Cafe, complete with a live studio audience. On Monday, November 16th, Kansas City Normal has their meeting. This will be at 4010 Pennsylvania Avenue in Kansas City. And there will be a drug reform discussion with Professor Mike Witte at the University of Michigan's Michigan Union, hosted by Students for Sensible Drug Policy and Michigan Normal. For more details, including contact information, maps, dates, and times for all of these events listed in your time zone, check out our calendar at normal.org/calendar. It's a Normal shout-out. Our shout-out today goes to the people of the Land of Enchantment. We're calling out to the folks in New Mexico. We have a chapter there that's kind of been dormant for a little bit. They're trying to reorganize, but I did meet the lady who's kind of running the secretarial duties. Her name is Desra Noel, and she's looking for other folks who can help repopulate the board to get New Mexico Normal active again. It's definitely time that we do it, so send me an email at stash@normal.org if you're in New Mexico, Albuquerque, Santa Fe, or elsewhere, and I'll put you in contact with Desra, and we'll see what we can put together. If you'd like to put together a Normal chapter in your state or area, just send me an email at stash@normal.org, and I'll give a shout-out to others in your area to help you get started.
Are you or is someone you know a marijuana smoker? Have you or has someone in your family been arrested for a marijuana violation? You need to know the truth about pot. Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, is the most comprehensive source of information regarding marijuana and its effects on health, as well as legal issues. Normal even offers a database of lawyers specializing in cannabis in your area. Normal, the nation's largest and most successful marijuana law reform organization, has spent decades gathering the knowledge and science on everything related to cannabis. Normal is the best resource to find out the truth about marijuana, connect with a lawyer in your area, or help find an end to prohibition. Information is available at normal.org, that's N-O-R-M-L.org, or toll free at 888-67-NORMAL.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our Normal daily audio stash, Cannabis Conversations. My day at the Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference began with the plenary session, which was attended by, in my estimation, at least 1,000, maybe 1,500 people in a huge ballroom at the Albuquerque Convention Center. I got there just in time to hear Ethan Nadelman deliver his opening remarks. And if you've never seen Ethan Nadelman speak, you are really missing out. He's quite an engaging lecturer and entertaining speaker. And of course, very, very knowledgeable on the issues. We begin here as Ethan is discussing the current movement of medical marijuana and marijuana in general in politics and culture.
Trying to get Republican co-sponsors, God bless them. You know, but it is going to move. There's a commitment coming out of the White House. What Obama's Justice Department did on the Justice Department guidelines on medical marijuana just a few weeks ago, that was major. Okay for them to get their hands dirty and begin to get involved in the business of medical marijuana. longer say that the feds are against us. They can no longer say we can't do this because we don't know what the feds will do. It opens the door. Even the drugs are saying quietly so far, let the state deal with that marijuana issue. And, you know, that's good enough by me.
After pointing out our recent successes like that Department of Justice memo, Ethan goes on to ask about the future of the movement and which direction we're headed.
Now, there's a bigger question, of course, about where are we headed? Where are we headed? Because, you know, in a way, our struggle is not just the struggle of the moment. It is the multi-generational struggle. It is, in part, about drugs, about the reality of all drugs, about the fact of the matter that not only have we never been a drug-free society, not only will we never be a drug-free society, but that, in fact, the diversity and variety of drugs is just going to grow and grow and grow. Turn on the television, which I don't do that often, but turn it on, and when you do, look at those commercials, one after another after another. Do you feel sad? Do you feel depressed? Anxious? Worried? Do you feel anything at all because we have a drug for you? Oh, yes, we do. And, you know, for better or worse, that is the future. We will have drugs being produced legally and illegally by multinational pharmaceutical companies and underground laboratories, producing things that make us go from sick to fine and from fine to better. That is the way to the future. And the question for us really is, how do we accept that reality? We know after decades of failure that we cannot build moats between ourselves and between our children and those drugs, between ourselves and those drugs. It doesn't work. It cannot happen. Who has the best access to drugs in America today? It's young people. Who had the best access 20 years ago? Young people. Who will have the best access? Young people. We're not going to protect our kids by more and more people going to prison, by fantasizing about more and more voters.
At this point, Ethan makes a comparison that I had never thought of before in the war on drugs, and I think you'll find it as fascinating as I do. Then Ethan moves on to discuss something of very intense interest to all of us that were in the room, being that there were so many different drug law reformers from so many different drug law reform organizations. And it's something we hear at Normal a whole lot as well. Why can't you all get along? Or why can't you all coordinate and have one unified strategy between all the different groups? And I think Ethan answers this as best as I've ever heard anyone put it.
We're the people who love drugs, we're the people who hate drugs, and we're the people who don't give a damn about drugs. But every one of us believe that the war on drugs is not the way to deal with drugs in our society today. We're the people who have enforced these laws, we're the people who have been victimized laws and the people who have never been directly touched by these laws, but who nonetheless believe that the war on drugs is not the way to deal with drugs in our society today. And who else are we? We are the people of color who have been horribly victimized and targeted in this war on drugs, and we are the people of lesser color who have also been so horribly victimized by these laws and policies. We are all people who care about freedom and justice, but it's inevitable. It's inevitable in every movement that we don't see eye to eye in many things. Look, sitting in this room are people from across the political spectrum. Sitting in this room are people from across the drug use spectrum and the drug law spectrum. Right? We know all of this. They're sitting in this room are people who primarily fight about marijuana and others about harm reduction, others about methadone, and others about mandatory minimums, and others about psychedelics. And some of us want to elevate our struggle over others. That's okay in your own lives. But understand that we are all part of one struggle. Marijuana is moving hard and fast now. I can't believe it. That Gallup poll that came out a few weeks ago. Did you see that? 23% support for legalizing marijuana in 1983, up to 44% today. It's 54% out west. It's 53% among Democrats. It's over 50% among people under the age of 50. And the thing I can't figure out, just 4 years ago, if you asked men and women about the support for legalizing marijuana, there was a 10-point gender gap, with women 10% less likely to support legalizing marijuana than men. You know what else? That gender gap just disappeared in 4 years. I don't get it, but thank you, women.
Indeed, thank you, women. And the topic of women and marijuana law reform seems to be really gaining steam. Of course, Normal is putting together the Normal Women's Project, and we'll have plenty more details on that next week. But also, I noticed flyers around the Drug Policy Alliance, this conference, that is, of a special women's meet and greet sort of networking opportunity amongst all the different drug law reformers. So I think this is something we'll hear a whole lot more of as we go on. As Ethan was closing up his speech, he continued to talk about the differences and the struggles we face as drug law reformers, how we may have personality conflicts within our movement, and we don't seem to have the same sort of issue with our enemies, or our opponents, I should say. And I thought he rounded it off with a very, very funny look at psychedelics as well. Enjoy.
That's part of it. Because, there's nobody you hate so much. Nobody you hate so much in a struggle for freedom and social justice as your fellow ally. Why? Because, you know them too well. You're fighting over turf and credit and funding and girlfriend, boyfriend, and all this sort of stuff. It's just part of what it is to be in there. Our opponents, our enemies, they're abstract. They're over there. But we have to keep it together. And I'll tell you something so recently. I'm going to speaking at conferences of doctors who specialize in pain medication. And I'm saying to them, listen, there is no basis in medicine or science or ethics for you not to utilize medical marijuana in treating pain and problems if you consider that an important option. And then that evening, I go and talk to a marijuana reform group. And I say, let me tell you something. There is no basis for you to demean and diminish the millions of Americans who rely legitimately on opioid medication to deal with their pain and their struggling. We're all in this. We have a rational realization about this. Yes, we can make opioids more dangerous and we can overdose and die, but that doesn't mean they don't have legitimate uses for millions and millions and millions of people. Let's not make those separations. The psychedelics area? Psychedelics, I love the psychedelics. Somebody who will admit that psychedelics have played an important role in my life and my evolution. I mean, right now, I'd say my life, I regard psychedelics a little bit like the way I do fasting on Yom Kippur. Once a year, it cleanses us all and open up the gym.
Burkford here from PeopleRadio.com, and you're listening to Normal, the podcast for the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Oh, I didn't know they needed reforming. It's illegal, you say? I'll be right back. Sorry, I had to flush my goldfish down the toilet. What was this about marijuana? Oh well, now on with the show.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Groovin' Thursday, our salute to all the dopest beats and killer rhymes we find in the best of rap, hip-hop, soul, R&B, and funk. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on the Daily Audio Stash, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. Welcome to our new music lineup on the Daily Toker Tunes. Today and every Thursday is now designated as Groovin' Thursday. We'll help you rev up for the weekend with the best PodSafe rap, R&B, soul, funk, and hip-hop music me and our volunteer music editors can find. Coming up tomorrow, we round out our new lineup with Rockin' Friday. And if you're a musician or band that would like your 420-friendly tune played on the Daily Toker Tunes, just send me an email at stash@normal.org. Now for today, Carlos Nino and Lil Psy are the hip-hop duo What the Science, and they bring in the vocals of Tiffany Page to work this latest track from their CD, Elevation. It's called Higher, and it's not just the herbal kind of higher we're talking about, but the need for all people to reach a higher plane of existence and interaction with each other. It's What the Science and their song, Higher.
Just like the Jeffersons, and through the next plane and never look back since. All the negative vibes are so irrelevant. Gotta keep it moving, never hesitant. We're going higher, high, higher. We're going higher, so high, so high.
Gotta look up, my people love the sun, children of melanin. Clear blue heavenly skies is so embellishing. No time for negative vibes, it's so irrelevant. No, he's not just an artist, girl, he's the president. Aiming for the top, gotta touch the sky. With good music like yay, can you testify? It goes so much deeper when you're blessed with rhymes. The same reason for these designs, you'll tell them why.
Moving on up just like the Jeffersons, through the next flame and never look back since. All the negative vibes are so irrelevant. Gotta keep it moving, never hesitant. We're going higher.
Sleep till he reaches his peak, writing the beat so weak his enemy is defeat. Feeling untouchable at times when he's writing these rhymes. Going through trials and tribulations, the outcome is divine still. You can't measure the grace, so just remember the face. Always blessed when he step into place. They've been said he was the chosen one ever since he was young. Bound to go high enough to touch the sun.
Moving on up just like the Jeffersons, through the next flame and never look back since. All the negative vibes are so irrelevant. Gotta keep it moving, never hesitant. You're going higher.
We meet upward like the pyramid structure. Not speaking on the feeling you might get from a substance. Not knocking it, just blocking it for my life right now. I stop smoking and drinking to get my head off the clouds. Think realistic, focus on the work of a shaman. Magic like hocus pocus, that's the essence that I'm in. I linked with Tiff Page, it was like perfect timing. There's a fire burning inside my soul, I keep shining.
Moving on up just like the Jeffersons, through the next flame and never look back since. All the negative vibes are so irrelevant. Gotta keep it moving, never hesitant. We're going higher.
Higher, 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 higher.
Hello, I'm Casper Leach, host of Time for Hemp. When our politicians passed the Marijuana Tax Act in 1937, the citizens of the United States had no idea that a new civil war had begun. Now, after more than 7 decades of this war's escalation and spending well over $1 trillion of taxpayers' money, the result has been an arrest record of more than 37 million brothers and sisters for nonviolent drug offenses. Every year, we choose to continue this war. We do so at the cost of well over $69 billion. Add to this, we are building prisons faster than we are building schools. In fact, the prison industry is now one of the fastest growing industries in the United States. We must end this civil war. We can with your help. Please, join LEAP, the law enforcement against prohibition, and become part of the solution to ending the war on drugs. Go to leap.cc and find out how to become a member.
As we continue our look at the DPA Reform Conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the first breakout session I was able to attend was on marijuana legislation. Aaron Houston, the governmental relations director or lobbyist from the MPP, was there to be the moderator, and he made an important point about why this legislation is now picking up steam in local government.
The cartels get 70% of their profits from marijuana sales alone, and most people's eyes pop out of their heads when they hear that figure. They wonder how is it possible they get 70% of their profits from marijuana sales alone. It's not because they're trucking it across the border, not because they're trucking it across the Mexican border. It's because they're active in 230 American cities. 230 American cities. I don't need to tell any of you that when we start talking about the number 230, we're not anymore just talking about cities like Miami or Seattle or even Albuquerque, which is a relatively smaller city by comparison, but big city in the state. We're talking about Pocatello, Idaho, Toppenish, Washington. Anybody ever heard of Albertville, Alabama? Raise your hand. Anybody? No, they're there too. They control the drug distribution network in Albertville, Alabama as well. And Lakeland, Florida. Okay, these are the sorts of places that the cartels run the show because of our laws, and that is starting to get a huge amount of attention on Capitol Hill.
Lorenzo Jones from the A Better Way Foundation in Connecticut described their ordeal in trying to get decrim passed in Connecticut and the unfortunate incident that happened with one of our normal activists there.
Quick, let me try this really quickly. We're all, just like right now, we're all sitting here, and we're going, okay, we've got to put together a decrim agenda for Connecticut. And so, right, we do the research, we start lining everybody up. We're doing the trainings, we get information out, fact sheets, the usual stuff. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we pick the newspaper up, like January 2nd, 2009, and there's an article on the front page of the Harper Current, saying, which is the Harper Connecticut main paper, that decriminalizing pot could ease budget deficits. And then the article talks about a decrim bill that has been introduced, and it's being introduced by the Speaker of the Majority Leader of the Senate, and it's being co-sponsored by the Senate Chair of Appropriations. We're like, what the hell happened? Nobody talked to us about it. And it has a life of its own. It's gone. The press is on it. The legislature is on it. All the neighborhood folks on the ground think it's our bill. They think we did it. So we're like, oh, yeah. But what we look, but and so because it's happening like that, we had an incident where one of the advocates made a mistake and sent the wrong email to the wrong person, and I don't want to rehash that. But what we learned from that was this, right? That the work we had done around medical marijuana, the work we have done around all the other issues has set the stage to the point where everybody from the legislature to neighborhoods that are averaging 2 or 3 shootings a month, right, around, you know, the drug trade, we're looking at marijuana and saying, not that marijuana was like this invisible thing in their community, but actually marijuana was this tool, right, and that this tool could be used to, you know, help pay for senior prescription drug coverage, and it could pay for transitional housing. And all the things that we had been winning over the last 10 years that had been being cut because of the budget deficit, arguments from media, arguments from advocates, arguments from professors and universities and doctors started rolling out saying, wait a minute, if we were to change these marijuana laws, then by default it would pull the rug underneath a lot of the school zone enforcement, school drug-free school zone law enforcement. If we could change marijuana laws, we could remove this stigma of you getting violated for your damn probation every time you get a dirty urine. Right? If we could pull this rug out from here, we could create $133 million, right, that could fund mission football programs in places like North Hartford. Right? people in suburban Connecticut and Thompson, Connecticut started saying, here's opportunity for me to support an agenda out of Hartford, right, that's going to do for Hartford things I think should be done for Hartford, New Haven, and Bridgeport. I want kids to have football. I want kids to have libraries. I want kids to have, you know, sidewalks. I want kids to have books and whatever else kids need, right? And so the idea was not about this thing of how great Decrim was. It was this idea that, right, we had an entire state from the majority leader in the Senate, right? The governor's shaking her boots because she knows it's coming to her desk, right, if it gets some legs under it. It gets through judiciary. I mean, all hell breaks loose. From there to drug addicts, right, on Brook Street in Hartford, or homeless people on Whaley Ave in New Haven saying, I have an opportunity to be a part of a movement in Connecticut that stands to provide for all these other issues I care about, resources, access, and protection. And so, I mean, that's like our thing. In Connecticut, we want people to think differently about drug policy. Marijuana reform helps us do that.
Mason Tvert and Allison Holcomb were also on the panel, though I don't have audio clips from them today, because I want to get this clip in, a fairly long clip, a 10-minute interview with Whitney Taylor. Now, she's the woman who directed the campaign that got decriminalization passed in Massachusetts. But since it's passed, there's been some controversy over the fact that the local municipalities in the Commonwealth are enacting greater fines now for public consumption as a sort of blowback against the passing of the decrim. I asked Whitney about that, and she granted me some time after the session very graciously to discuss this controversy.
So we're speaking now with Whitney Taylor, who is the woman in charge of getting the question 2 passed in Massachusetts, I guess. That's a thumbnail way of describing it. And, you know, question 2, amazing, passed, like you said, 65.2%. Nobody's going to get arrested for marijuana possession. One thing that's happened in the wake of this, though, is we've seen a lot of the local municipalities passing these, the public consumption, the public thing, where they're increasing the fines, you know, up to $300 in some places with regards to marijuana possession. And I was told, and please, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I was told that in Massachusetts, the localities don't have the rules where they can change what the state does. But in question 2, that power was given to them so that they're now able to increase $300 fines. Is that incorrect?
That's incorrect.
Okay.
Localities can decide to do, every municipality has a municipal ticketing system.
Okay.
And one of the things, once again, with question 2, because there are so many rules surrounding initiatives in Massachusetts, that we had to write into the existing municipal ticketing system. So, for example, some of our naysayers said, oh, well, nobody can get tickets because they don't have a ticket booklet. That's not true. Every municipality has a ticket booklet, and, you know, there's hundreds of different civil fines in municipalities, and they have lines, so you just fill in, this is what it is, and here's your ticket. So there has always existed a municipal ticketing system. Municipalities have always been able to do something like, you know, if you don't pick up your garbage on Wednesday, which is our garbage day, you get this ticket, or something of that nature. So they are allowed to do these things. As a campaign, one of the things that we talked about in this, because of public consumption, because then they started bringing in school zones, and what about people smoking on campuses, and you're going to take over our schools and tell our teachers what they can do. I actually said, as the director and chairwoman of the campaign, listen, public consumption laws are separate than this. We're talking, and as long as there are no criminal charges trying to be implemented in this, we as a committee are going to say silent on it. So, you know, very honestly, that is where we came from. The number of municipalities, there was a flutter in the beginning of, I think, like maybe 7 or 8. You got to remember, in Massachusetts, we have 351 towns and cities. So 7 or 8, go ahead and doing that. It was very interesting because more often than not, it was the local representative that said, it passed, it won, leave it alone. That was, once again, our relationship that we had over the years with the legislature, them seeing 65%, why am I going to go up against that, and saying, leave it alone. Some municipalities have moved forward with that. I think, you know, sour grapes showing, oh, that we're going to be in control. And if, you know, communities want to go back and try and repeal that, that is then their city council process, which is much more easily navigatable than the state legislature, or, of course, you know, trying to do another initiative, which you really couldn't do because that's the court systems and, once again, areas that an initiative in Massachusetts aren't allowed to tackle. So, yes, that is happening. We have not heard heard of one that is actually trying to kick up to some sort of criminal charge, and you know, of the several that have passed, I think it was a lot of bluster. I have not been hearing of any. Once again, we are always open to abuses. You know, we have a support people, all the people that endorse this initiative, that would be there ready to litigate if necessary.
Okay. So is it fair to say that before Question 2 passed, they could have, the localities could have passed these public consumption things? They really didn't until it passed, and this is kind of their retribution.
This is a bit of their retribution. I mean, for example, I mean, you've never been able to smoke outright on the common. I mean, you can get arrested for that. I mean, we saw, you know, the fest every year that Basquiat Normal does.
Well, it was my first time at that Boston Freedom Rally this year.
The Freedom Rally, and so I mean, people got arrested for public consumption at that for years. I mean, that's what it was. So, you know, it depends. And then, you know, of course, there's rules as in every community. What is this? Is this a city park? Is this a state park? Is it a federal park? I mean, there's a lot of rules out of there. So I personally saw it as, once again, sour grapes trying to take a swipe, and I haven't heard of any real abuses. Do I think it's stupid? Yeah. But you know, unfortunately, the reality of Question 2 is, while as I am sure it is the most progressive marijuana reform we have seen in this country as far as repetition and not increasing penalties and not increasing to a criminal fine, it is always a civil fine for, you know, no matter what. If they're going to kick that back us a little, you know, it's something that we will look at, and, you know, with local communities, and that's something that's great. Most of those battles, the local community decide to do that, and that's great. You know, if it happens in Boston, I'm a resident of Boston. I would be at Boston City Hall there, you know, talking about it. But, you know, I think that's some way that's another way that people can continue to be involved in Massachusetts. And, you know, I think it's really important to recognize the forest through the trees. Is it petty? Is it annoying? Is it stupid? 100% yes. But still, at the end of the day, you know, for something that you could have gotten arrested and have the rest of your life affected by, if it's still just another fine. Besides the fact that there's also written into Question 2, if you are indigent and you can't pay, you can get waivers. For example, young people, if they have to complete a little education thing, if there's not education available within their school district, it's too hard for them to get to it. They are not faulted for that. So, the devil's really in the details, and what local communities have to look at is, say, you know, is this just blustering, and does it actually even fit into this law anymore?
Okay. One last thing. Everybody's kind of leaving out the room here, so just one other question. You obliquely kind of referenced it in your talk, and that was the controversy that existed in Question 2 with the introduction of the idea of internal possession,
right,
where there would be people were... It was decriminalizing the internal possession of marijuana metabolites, where before Question 2, it wasn't defined in any sort of way.
Actually not true.
Okay.
We have in Massachusetts, the Supreme Judicial Court came out with a reading. Once again, this is our politicians and people being wimpy about these issues. There was actually a case in Massachusetts where a woman was charged with child abuse for delivering in utero crack cocaine to her child. And this went all the way up to our Supreme Judicial Court in Massachusetts. The court, unfortunately, in my opinion, was too wimpy and did not say internal possession doesn't count as anything. They did find in favor of the woman and say, no, you cannot charge her with this internal possession and this, you know, delivering drugs to her baby in vitro. However, they left the door open where it could very easily swing that way in the law, because they refused to say there is no such thing as internal possession, but people have been arrested for it. We're going to find this one woman not guilty, but that doesn't mean somebody else.
They didn't set any sort of
precedent. They set no precedent. Okay. They set no standard. Okay. So that is something that we wanted to move forward in saying, okay, well, let's talk about it.
Was it an idea then that let's nip this in the bud before they think of it first?
To me, it was. I mean, obviously, some people had thought about it because we ended up with the Supreme Judicial Court case.
Sure.
Now, you know, whether or not there's another DA out there that wants to push it, another defense case where they wanted to test it all the way up through the system again, I don't know. That can always happen. But our point was starting right there and seeing, and this is what I can't wait to see litigated, is somebody that says, wait a minute, I put personal possession of marijuana with this positive drug test. That's just a civil infraction. You can't revoke my probation. Yeah. I'm waiting for that case.
Yes.
I would love to see that case.
Yes.
And that's what, you know, that's an envelope trying to push.
Well,
it's something I couldn't say during the campaign.
So what's next for you as far as
I don't know.
Policy and advocacy, medical marijuana in Massachusetts?
There is medical marijuana working in Massachusetts. Some folks on my team are working on that. It's, you know, it's very exciting. I mean, talk about something that should have happened. In Massachusetts, medical marijuana pulls at 83%.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no, I don't think there's anything, I mean, is there anything else people agree on that much? So medical marijuana, and that is in the legislative process, and medical marijuana did go through the process that I was talking about before. There have been, you know, there has been people working on this since the 90s. Governor Weld actually did sign a medical marijuana bill, but right before he signed it, he changed a couple of words to make it so as long as the feds, and that we have no way of getting the marijuana, it's still legal in Massachusetts. So all the great work that people did during the 80s and 90s totally kind of got washed out by Weld. You know, we have all the public policy questions always winning by huge amounts. Medical marijuana is something that it's really difficult to do in the initiative process in Massachusetts because of the single subject rule.
Right.
And as soon as you kind of veer off into anything else and touching any other type of rule or policy or law, you will be found unconstitutional. So we are working in the legislature there still. The legislature, very interestingly enough, I did work medical marijuana before the Question 2 campaign, and the then chair of the Public Health Committee, you know, we had a great hearing. We have wonderful patients who are very vocal in Massachusetts. They're awesome. And they got up there, and it made me so enraged when that chair actually had the audacity to sit there and say, I hear you, I feel you, I agree with you, you should have your medicine. And then he turned around to me in a room and said, well, as long as the feds are going to go after states that have medical marijuana, we're not going to do anything. Well, we now know this, so this is one of the things that we are now pushing forward, saying that was your only reason about being against medical marijuana was you were worried about the feds. No longer a worry, so let's do it. So hopefully that will ring true.
Excellent. Whitney Taylor, thank you so much for giving us a moment of your time.
It's great meeting you.
And thanks a lot for clearing up a lot of that confusion. You know, there's so much in the world of Twitter and email and the internet that gets amplified beyond what the truth might be, so thanks for giving us this moment.
And you know, the reality is we all have to step back and remember we are all going for the same goals, and one of the things that I talked about in this session and that I always talk about is the fact that we all have our strengths, and we all have the, you know, communities that we best represent, communities that we best speak to, and that we need everybody, no matter what your background, no matter what your belief system, to reach out to those that they mesh with the best, and that we all are on the same side. And you know, it does get, you know, as Aaron said, you know, when it comes into funding or money or competition or ego,
credit,
you know, it's crazy, and I understand that. And you know, there's a lot of amazing people in this movement that do a ton of amazing work, and even if we all don't disagree all the time, I have nothing but, you know, respect for them. Even if, you know, I'm shouting them across the room saying I think that's the wrong way to do it, that's because they can shout at me thinking what I'm doing is the wrong way to do it.
Thanks so much, Whitney. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Later in the day, I was able to attend a breakout session that was specifically focused on medical marijuana. And while there were many guests there that I have sound clips from and will be adding to later daily audio stashes, I specifically wanted to bring this one because I finally got a chance to ask a question in one of these sessions. Karen O'Keefe is the director of state operations for the Marijuana Policy Project, and I have been critical in the Stash blog of some of their most recent initiatives and bill proposals regarding medical marijuana, as I feel they have become overly restrictive and traded away too many patient rights in order to just get a win. So this is my question to her at the session, which is also followed up by the Arizona MPP director, who answered it from the audience.
Are there other questions?
Yes, Russ Belville from Normal. I had a question for Karen. You know, California passed medical marijuana. It's been in place for 13 years, and to this point, the majority of the people there are now supporting outright legalization. 12 other states have passed medical marijuana. It seems to be very popular there. You can't find a state where there's not supermajority support for medical marijuana. And yet the bills that have come out lately have been bills that take away the right to grow at home. The initiative in Arizona requires people can't grow at home if they're within 25 miles of a dispensary. We're taking away chronic pain as a qualifying condition, only allowing people that are terminally ill. If medical marijuana is doing so well and has become so popular amongst the people, why are the bills becoming more restrictive instead of more expansive?
I think you have to look at all of the individual bills one by one. The one that was the most limited, where they took away the right to cultivate in New Hampshire, the reason for that was each of the chambers had passed a version of the medical marijuana bill. The governor then said that he would veto any bill that allowed for home cultivation. We had not gotten the 16 votes that we needed to get past the Senate, so the only, you know, it would just be a piece of paper if you vetoed it and you don't have enough to override. So there had to be an amendment or it would have had no chance of becoming law. But that one does include chronic pain. Which ones?
With the Minnesota, the Pawlenty video?
That was, that actually my colleagues in state campaigns worked on because they're based in Minnesota, but that was a hostile amendment that was offered at the last minute. But Pawlenty had said that he was going to veto it no matter, he'd already said he was going to veto it. So it was kind of an attempt to have him not veto it to see if there was something that had some chance, but there was no chance that he was going to let it become law if it was broader. So unfortunately, the legislators are way beyond the people. They're really afraid of this for some reason. You can show them polling in their district. They are still afraid, and some will tell you that they've been told that there will be a mailer that goes out to every mother that says they voted for pot. It's very unfortunate. The Rhode Island legislature is wonderful and brave and did the right thing and found out that it didn't hurt them, but other legislators are not as comfortable with this. And I think that we've seen, you know, when I first started at MPP, I wasn't as sure that you could necessarily go back and amend the law. And in Vermont, when the law passed, it was the same kind of thing. The only way you could get it passed was by narrowing it down, unfortunately. But then, 3 years later, they came back again. They added additional conditions. They added additional amounts of marijuana. And that passed. And the state police had been opposed at first. And they said, you know, it hasn't really caused a problem. So I wish we could get the perfect law passed everywhere. It's all just a calculation of what can you actually enact. And if you can't enact it, then, you know, it's all well and good if it's perfect, but it's not going to pass it.
Well, is that the thought behind the Arizona initiative? I mean, that's going before the people, not the legislators.
Karen, can I jump in about Arizona?
That would be great.
Thank you. I'm Andrew Myers. I'm the campaign manager for the Arizona Medical Marijuana Policy Project. Your question about, there have been a couple of instances that have come up today where we made passing mention of a couple of provisions within our bill. Our number one concern when we drafted that piece of legislation was patient access. And believe it or not, the 25-mile halo around dispensaries is in that vein. The reason being is that we want to make sure, because we are opting with a nonprofit dispensary model, we believe that dispensaries are the best avenue for patient access, that the average patient who has never cultivated marijuana in the past doesn't have a relationship with a caregiver, gets a recommendation from their endocrinologist, would much rather go to a dispensary. So it became important for us to think about what is going to make these dispensaries viable. So what we decided to do is we went with a statewide cap on the number of dispensaries that is tied to, like you mentioned, the number of pharmacies we have licensed in our state. We said that for every 10 pharmacies that are licensed, we will have one dispensary, which comes out to about 120 dispensaries currently in Arizona. The 25-mile halo around the dispensaries was, again, to give a market to the dispensaries in the community so that they would be viable and so they're available for patients. 95% of patients who are medical marijuana patients don't have any desire to cultivate. I mean, the people that are in this room are not the mainstream of the medical marijuana patients. I mean, we're people who are much more active and committed in the cause and have a lot more knowledge and have the ability to handle it in a different way than your average patient would. So we tried to create an initiative that would be the best initiative that we could create for your average patient. I mean, you may disagree with some of the decisions that we made, and I don't have any problem discussing with people afterwards about the way that we made choices within the initiative. But trust me, the patient access for your average patient was our number one concern when we drafted that initiative. And I'm confident that we will have a very high-functioning medical marijuana program when this goes into effect and be something that will be the end of the country. That's what we hope to do.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with the reminder that tomorrow is day two of the DPA Reform Conference. I will be moderating a roundtable discussion on marijuana's cultural moment. The panel also includes Normal's Executive Director, Alan St. Pierre. Also, Paul Armentano will be giving a talk in the early morning, and I will be bringing you audio from all of those events on the Daily Audio Stash tomorrow. Also, there's plenty more sound clips from so many fantastic speakers that I have from today and probably from tomorrow, and I'll be bringing those to you on next week's Daily Audio Stashes. So stay tuned over the next week for more audio from the DPA Reform Conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Thanks for downloading the stash and being understanding for the late posting while I'm out here on the road. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.